WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Holly Hunter, best known for her roles in Broadcast News, Raising Arizona, The Piano, Crash, and last year's Living Out Loud. Her awards include an Oscar for The Piano and Best Actress from the New York Film Critics Circle and LA Film Critics Association for Broadcast News. She started her career in theater and returned to the stage last fall to star in Impossible Marriage, the seventh play by Beth Henley that Hunter has performed in. Hunter's latest film, the comedy Living Out Loud, will be out on video next month. Hunter plays a woman who gave up her own ambitions when she married a surgeon. But now that he's walked out on her, she's lost. In this scene, she goes to a club, alone, to hear a singer she loves, played by Queen Latifah. Too shy to actually approach the singer, here's the conversation Hunter imagines having with her.
Oh, Scotchberry, you were great.
Well, thank you. Look a little sad tonight. You alone?
I don't know anybody on the Upper West Side.
Oh, where are you from?
Upper East Side. My husband left me. Our friends were his friends. I haven't really spoken to anyone. I mean, really spoken to anyone. I feel so invisible sometimes I forget I'm here.
I was married. My husband cheated on me left and right. It made me feel like I was crazy all the time. One day he tells me it's my fault he saw other women. So I picked up a knife and told him it was his fault I was stabbing him. I mean, I did a little jail time. It was worth it. Now I'm free, and he is scared of me.
That's great. I wish I would have stabbed my husband.
Holly Hunter, welcome to Fresh Air. How would you describe your character in Living Out Loud?
Well, I think that she is a woman in transition, and a woman who is taking a leap rather than a fall. And I think that was what most appealed to me about the interpretation of the character. Because I think that to make every single action that she took a choice rather than her being victimized by it was the most interesting way to approach her.
Well, I agree, because I think this is a woman whose life is falling apart. Her husband's left her. She has no identity left of her own. But you give her this certain strength and vitality. She's not just like a neurotic mess. She's an interesting, strong-willed person in spite of everything that's happening to her.
Yeah, I didn't want her to be motivated strictly by anger, which I think it was just a choice that I really wanted to avoid, because I thought it would be very uninteresting to see a really angry woman from scene to scene. Now, I just wanted it to be more adventurous than that.
There's a scene in Living Out Loud in which you're passionately kissed by a mysterious stranger, played by Elias Koteas. He's a great actor. He's now co-starring in The Thin Red Line. He starred in Exotica and co-starred with you in Crash. What's he doing in such a small part? I mean, he kisses you, and that's kind of the part.
Well, you know, first off, Elias and I are really good friends, and he also just finished playing a part in a movie that was directed by my husband, and I'm not sure what it's with Winona Ryder. I'm not sure what the title is going to eventually be, but he is a very good friend of both of ours, and I really wanted Elias to do that part because I love Elias dearly, but I also think that he is capable of transforming himself as an actor, and some actors are not. And I thought that that was the pivotal scene in the movie. The movie originally was called The Kiss, so it was actually titled after that particular scene. So the web of the character was all centered around him, really, for me. So I wanted a very particular actor who was extremely soulful to play that part, not just someone who was kind of lightweight or could bring only comedy to the scene. I wanted someone to bring depth to it.
Did you meet him in Crash?
Yes, I did. And we worked very little together in Crash, but it was a very close cast. As a matter of fact, I've kept up with all of them since we wrapped that movie, and that's a bit rare for me because very often movies are pleasant to shoot, but then you go on and there's only so many friends that you can gather and be responsible to in your life. And so it's kind of amazing that I have kept up with all of them.
Well, I imagine it was a pretty intense movie to make. Crash is David Cronenberg's adaptation of J.G. Ballard's novel about people who are sexually aroused by car crashes. And I think some people would have thought the subject matter of this movie is so sick that they wouldn't go near it. What did you like about it as a screenplay when you first saw it?
I think it was the alienation.
Plenty of that in there, yeah.
All of the characters experienced. I kind of liked that landscape. And I thought that the relationship between sex and death, which is, you know, as old as man, I thought it was really interesting to have a script so blatantly explore that relationship rather than kind of alluding to it in an oblique way. This script, this novel was going right into the center of what Ballard perceived to be the relationship between sex and death. And I thought that Cronenberg would be the filmmaker to attempt the filming of that novel. I couldn't think of another filmmaker who really should make the effort. And I've wanted to work with Cronenberg for years. And in a funny way, I wish I had to do Crash again, because I think that I would take a different approach, because my approach was more external than it was internal at the time. It's not a regret. It's just a wish that I wish I could do that movie over again. And I don't know if all of us might feel that way, because it was such an enticing subject matter and so complicated that I kind of felt for me that the movie was a rehearsal and now I'd like to do it for real.
What would you do different?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. It's just I would like to re-explore it, because I felt that I was dissatisfied with the result of how I approached my character. It was much more external than I would have liked for it to have been. The more that I look at my own work and what I find to be, I would say, compelling to watch is when an actor, including myself, when an actor is really working from someplace intensely personal, then I find it galvanizing. And when it's less than intentionally personal, I find it more cosmetic, you know, where it might be pleasing, the person may be doing something that's pleasant or pleasing to look at or aesthetically lovely, but nothing is really there for me to be riveted by.
So it seems to me you've made movies at kind of opposite extremes. You know, you've made comedies like Living Out Loud and Broadcast News, and then, you know, like odd, bizarre films like Crash, and then The Piano, which is also at another extreme. In The Piano, you played a woman in, the mid-1800s who moves from Scotland to New Zealand to marry a settler there, and she's so in love with her piano and playing the piano that she brings the piano on this long voyage, and the woman is mute, so you don't speak any dialogue through the movie. What did you rely on to communicate, knowing that you wouldn't have words to communicate with?
Well, I think that was a very personal role for me, so I really felt confident of what I was about, just in my head, you know, and what the character wanted from scene to scene. It was very, I had an intimate relationship with her and her needs and her desires, so I counted on that. I depended on that would communicate.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that you wanted this part very much and that you had to go after it. How did you see the screenplay and why did you want it?
Well, right away, from the first 5 or 6 pages, she felt quite iconic to me. She felt epic. She felt like a woman who was larger than life and yet was keeping a whole lot from you as a viewer or as a reader. She emanated mystery, and at the same time seemed like a goddess on a beach. You know, it was really like a character that you could only imagine playing but never actually read in a script. Maybe in a novel, because novels are so imaginary. You know, they live in your subconscious almost if they're really great. And this is the way the script read. It read as though it were one of those novels that you never want to end.
Did you have to convince Jane Campion to cast you?
Yes, but that's not altogether unusual for me, partially because of who I am and partially because of what roles I've chosen to play. Often people don't initially see me in a character, as was the case with Living Out Loud. I auditioned for Living Out Loud, which I was something I really wanted to do, and I had absolutely no problems with it because it was a character no one had ever seen me do, and therefore they couldn't see me in the part. And I certainly saw myself in the part. I really wanted to play her very much. I thought she had a lot to say, and I wanted to be the one who would have her say it.
My guest is Holly Hunter. Her latest film is Living Out Loud. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Holly Hunter is my guest. Her first major film role was in the 1987 movie Raising Arizona. Hunter plays a police officer who marries an ex-con played by Nicolas Cage. Unable to have children of their own, they decide to kidnap one of their town's famous quintuplets. In this scene, Cage returns to the car where Hunter awaits him after a botched kidnapping attempt.
What's the matter?
I'm sorry, honey. It just didn't work out.
What do you mean it didn't work out?
Well, they started crying, and they were all over me. It was kind of horrifying, honey. Let me in.
Of course they cried, babies cry.
Well, I know that. Now, come on, honey. We better leave.
You go right back up there and get me a toddler. I need a baby high. They got more than they can handle.
Oh, honey,
don't you come back here without a baby.
Many people first noticed you, I think, in your two 1987 movies, Broadcast News and Raising Arizona, both comedies. Which one did you make first?
Raising Arizona.
And how did you get the part?
Well, Joel and Ethan Coen saw me in a play on Broadway, and then we got to be friends because I met them through that play. And then they cast a very good friend of mine, Frances McDormand, in Blood Simple, their first movie, and we all got to be great friends. And then they wrote this part in Raising Arizona for me and asked me would I do it, and of course, you know, why not?
Right.
Which is what I still say about those guys. Why not? You know, it will always be one of my most favorite movies that I've ever done.
Well, it must be a nice way to enter movies by having a role that was written for you.
Yeah, it's the only one that's ever been written for me, and I'm pleased about that.
Mm-hmm. So your first major film role was written for you, but the second one, Broadcast News, I think you had to convince the director, James Brooks, to consider you for the part. You played in this very high-pressure, deadline-oriented, driven TV producer, news producer. How'd you get the part?
Oh, you know, I campaigned. I auditioned. I think, you know, the producer of that, Polly Platt, and Jim Brooks, when I walked into audition, they thought that I was a production assistant. They thought I was a PA for their movie. So I don't know what they were expecting. But at any rate,
What does that mean that they thought that you looked unassuming? That you
Well, I mean, I think that I was totally unassuming. Very young, very small, kind of an ordinary girl. And which I very much am, an ordinary girl, and I love to play ordinary people. So this is also one of the things that makes me kind of low profile. It allows me a certain amount of anonymity in my life, which is great. But it also allows me to play ordinary people up close. And in a funny way, I think that's what Jane Craig was, the character in Broadcast News. She was an ordinary woman who, at closer examination, was quite extraordinary, and so I went in and spent about an hour and a half reading the script with Bill Hurt, who happened to be there reading with actresses. And it was a fabulous afternoon. And that was pretty much it.
Holly Hunter is my guest. Her latest movie is Living Out Loud. Now, you have a Southern accent. You grew up near Atlanta. Did that ever stand in the way of parts that you wanted?
Well, in Living Out Loud, I don't play a Southerner. And in The Piano, I don't play a Southerner.
You don't speak, so... Well, I guess there's narration, though, right?
Yeah, I did a Scottish narration at the beginning and end of the movie. So, you know, I don't really think it's impeded me.
You grew up on a farm in a town near Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Did the farm... Was it a working farm?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, I would say that my father had two things going on. He was very much... a hay and cattle farmer, as were my two brothers, who were raised on the farm. And my father was also a manufacturer's rep for sporting goods. So he was more than a gentleman farmer, but he was more than just a plain farmer as well. I mean, he was a businessman. So, but he taught my brothers also to operate the farm. So it's still, at this time, a farm that people make their livings off of.
You had, I think, five brothers?
Yes, five brothers and a sister. We were all extremely spread out in age. So, I, for example, I have a brother who's 20 years older than me. So obviously, there were quite a few of them that I didn't really grow up with. But nevertheless, you know, 250 acres, there was plenty of room for each of us.
Were you ribbed a lot for being a girl by your brothers?
You know, but I was the seventh child in that family, so by that point, you know, I kind of think we were all left, I kind of was left to have myself grow up. It was like, okay, Holly, you know, go grow up. There was a tremendous amount of freedom that I had at that point. I was not surveyed. I was not policed in any way by my parents. I had a tremendous amount of freedom, and I've always told my parents that they were very, very lucky that none of us were incredibly wild, because we could have been if we'd wanted to be.
How did you use this freedom that your parents allowed you?
Well, my brothers had very much of a working place on the farm, and I did not, because I was a girl. There was that, I don't know what you would call it, but boys got to do what boys did and girls had to do what girls did, except that I didn't really fit into the cooking, gardening section. I kind of made my own life there on the farm, which was, I think, largely an imaginative life, where I spent a lot of time by myself, out in the fields or the woods, playing, making up games, making up people, friends. I read voraciously as a child. So it was a different kind of experience for me growing up there than it was for my brothers.
What access did you have to movies and to theaters?
None.
None?
None. Really, really none. Television was not a big thing when I was growing up, and there was only one theater in my hometown that was converted to a Baptist church. So there was really none of that influence.
So if you're not exposed to a lot of acting, how do you know you want to act?
Well, I think I was a really, you know, extremely romantic little soul. I had many fantasies that were, I would imagine, quite, you know, silly and grand. And I started doing plays in high school, which we did strictly musicals. So my first musical was The Boyfriend, and I loved it. It was fabulous. And then I just continued doing musicals. I just did one after another until a director in Atlanta spotted me and asked me to, at the age of 15, apprentice in his upstate New York repertory theater company. So I went when I was 15 and apprenticed, and then I went back when I was 16 and apprenticed again, and decided that I wanted to be a professional actress. So I went to, I auditioned for and got into Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and studied acting for 4 years.
What career, kind of career did you think you were going to have at that point?
I really wanted to be a stage actress. That was my dream. And I would actually say that's the only goal that I've ever had. I'm not particularly goal-oriented. I have short-term temporary goals, and generally they manifest themselves in characters. But other than that, that was my one wish.
And you've done a lot of theater.
Yes, and continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand the first line that you ever spoke in a movie was in a low-budget horror film called The Burning, which I looked up in Leonard Maltin's movie book, and he grades it bomb. would you concur?
Yeah, I think my line was, "Look, there's Todd," but I have not seen The Burning in a few years. But Harvey Weinstein,
from
the
Miramax,
celebrated distributor, producer, produced that movie, and that was my introduction to film, was Harvey.
And did you think you'd be stuck in movies like that for a while?
No, I looked at it as an utter privilege and honor and fun time because I'd been in New York for 3 weeks. I got this movie with a bunch of people my age. It was like going to camp. The movie was about camp.
A murderer at summer camp.
Right. I was familiar with camp. I'd been to camp many times as a teenager. So I felt really at home, and it was a bunch of actors, and I really like actors. And like I said, we were all the same age. I was making more money than I'd ever made in my life. It was like, I don't know, $1,500 a week scale. But it was, you know, I was rich. I was young. I was living in New York. I was full of hope. The Burning was the best thing that had happened to me up until that point.
Did you put it on your resume?
Oh, yes, with pride.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Terry.
Holly Hunter's latest film, Living Out Loud, will be out on video next month. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.